Our special guest today is our friend Marvin Blum. Marvin is the founder and managing partner of the Blum Firm PC. He received his JD from the University of Texas School of Law, graduating second in his class, and his BBA in accounting from the University of Texas at Austin, graduating first in his class. Mr. Blum is board certified in estate planning and probate law. New York's Worth magazine named Mr. Blum to their prestigious list of the nation's top 100 attorneys. And he joins us now to talk with Scott Bishop, Director of Financial Planning for STA Wealth Management. Scott?
Thank you, Max. I'm really happy today to have Marvin Blum on the show. For those of you that are long-term listeners of our show, we've had Marvin Blum, estate planning attorney extraordinaire with the Blum Law Firm. We're going to be talking about a lot of really important financial planning, estate planning, and income tax planning issues that we need to deal with based on what's happened now that we know it's going to be a Democrat-controlled Senate House and also having a Democratic-controlled White House. These are very important things that we'll want to consider going forward in 2021. Marvin, thanks for being on the show today.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, I have several questions for you, and I know it's going to be hard to hit this all in the show that we have today, in the one-hour show we have. So I'm going to be following this up, for those that are listening, with an article on our website at stawealth.com that will give more of this detail if you'll need a refresher if Marvin and I hit a lot of these things. But I'm just going to go through my list of questions with you right now, if that's okay, Marvin.
You bet.
Okay. Well, I kind of led into that with the blue wave sweep that we've seen now. How easy is it now for Democrats to change tax policy?
Well, first I'll state the obvious. With the triple D scenario that we now have, which is a Democratic White House, Democratic House, and a Democratic Senate, that certainly opens the door for Democrats to kind of have a carte blanche to do whatever they want. The Republicans kind of paved the way for how you do that. When Republicans pass without one single Democratic vote, the Democrats cannot do that without one single Republican vote. But there's another thing that makes it easier to pass this legislation that may not be so obvious to folks, and that is this concept of the Byrd rule, B-Y-R-D. It was Senator Byrd, and it's in the Senate. And if it's a piece of legislation that is going to have a negative impact on the budget, if you're looking 10 years out, the simple way of saying this is that legislation would have to have 60 senators vote in favor of it for it to pass. And so in the past, when they were trying to pass tax decreases, they had to have 60 senators vote to approve it. To get around that rule, they had to build in all these sunset provisions. Why you have these crazy tax laws that say certain provisions sunset after a period of time, such as after a period of 10 years, because they had to finagle it so that it would not impact the budget negatively 10 years out. Well, if you're now passing a tax increase, that's not going to have a negative impact on the budget 10 years out. So you see what that means is that law can pass with only 50 votes in the Senate. So you have all 50 Democrats vote for it. And then the tiebreaker is the vice president comes along, Kamala Harris votes along with them. Now you can pass it with 50 senators rather than what used to take 60. So it's even easier to raise taxes than it was under the Trump days when you were trying to lower taxes.
Well, that's really true. And most of us, and I've written like you have, and we spoke about this quite a bit. Actually, I'll probably post a link, Marvin, to the Financial Planning Association on my Tax and Estate Planning Knowledge Circle that I hosted last year you were on, because we talked a lot about these things too. So I'll probably allow that. And that also included, Marvin, your slides. So people will be able to get that in the slides through the article that I'll post probably later this week. But one of the important things, and we had some clients that wanted to get stuff done before year end, but now that the year has passed and now that we know we have the triple D scenario, like you said, based on prior precedent, do you feel that any of the tax law changes will be retroactive, and how far? Will it just be January 1st, 2021, or what should people expect?
Well, you know, none of us have a crystal ball here. We all wish we did. But when I look into my crystal ball, my gut says that it is not likely that the tax legislation will be retroactive. We certainly hope it won't be. If it were retroactive, I mean, conceivably, it could be retroactive to January 1, 2021. But again, most commentators feel that that is not likely to happen for several reasons. One is for it to be retroactive, you'd probably need to get this tax legislation passed pretty early in the year. It would be hard to imagine that they would pass something late in the year and then try to make it retroactive back to, you know, beginning of the year. So, but you know, it's possible. And certainly it's possible with the recent events, because obviously the resentment against President Trump is now at an all-time high. And I kind of quandary here in my mind, would there be some kind of an act of revenge, perhaps, to say, you know, we're going to get even by repealing the Trump Tax Act, you know, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was passed early in the Trump administration? Could they say, you know, hey, that's going to be our way of getting back at you, to try to just step in here and quickly get that repealed? I mean, it takes a long time to draft tax legislation, but it doesn't take very long to repeal an existing law and just go back to the way the law was before. And I recall when Kamala Harris was in a vice president debate against Mike Pence, she made that comment. She says, you know, one of the first things we're going to do is repeal the Trump Tax Act. And I thought, oh my God, okay, well, that could happen. But I will say that the last time that we had a tax increase that was retroactive goes back to President Bill Clinton's first term. He was elected in 1992, and early in the 1993 Congress, they did raise taxes, and they made that retroactive to January 1, 1993. So obviously that's in, you know, our lifetimes, it could happen. But, you know, here's the reality, Scott. I am aware, and all of us are, that Congress has a lot on its plate. I can't imagine that the very first thing that these Congress people want to do is be known for raising taxes. I would think that the first thing they want to do is address another round of stimulus. They want to get the $2,000 checks out in the mail. They want to deal with COVID issues and the vaccinations. They want to deal with the economic crisis and infrastructure and, you know, healthcare. Healthcare could be high on the list, especially if the Supreme Court were to strike down the Obama healthcare, you know.
Well, Marvin, real quick, there's a lot of changes, I think, and even the impeachment trial that may happen. But what I really want to do is, when we come back on the other side of this break, what I'd really like to do is talk about some of the biggest provisions that you think may be important for them to enact that relates to estate tax and income tax planning law. We'll be right back on the Money Hour. Welcome back to the Money Hour. Basically, today the show is all about possible changes in income tax, estate taxes, and many of the things that may happen now with the, according to Marvin Blum, the triple D, the democratically controlled Washington, D.C. So Marvin, to kind of continue on from what we were in the last segment, what I really want to ask you is, based on Biden's tax positions that he's at least laid out during the campaign, and also based on the unity agenda he came up with Bernie Sanders, what do you believe will be his priorities in terms of changes in both estate and income tax planning for 2021 going forward?
Well, there's a lot to discuss here, because there really is a lot on their agenda related to tax change. And so let's unpack this. Let's start with estate tax. In his campaign, Biden called for a return to the 2009 estate tax levels. Well, what was that? First of all, in 2009, the estate tax exemption was $3.5 million. You know, today it's 11.7 million. So that's quite a change. That's if huge. You go from 11.7 down to 3.5. But furthermore, the lifetime gift exemption, and most people forget this, but the lifetime gift exemption was less. It was 1 million. Right now it's 11.7 million for lifetime gifts, but that go down to 1 million. And the top rate, which is currently 40%, if you incur an estate tax or a gift tax today, it's 40%, but the top rate back then was 45%. So that's one round of changes. Here's a very hot topic, and that has to do with what we call stepped-up basis. Current law is that when you die owning assets that have appreciated, your heirs take those assets from you, and they get a new tax basis equal to what those assets were worth on your date of death. So for example, you had a stock you paid $10 for, and at the time of your death, it was worth $25. When you die and your kids inherit that stock from you, they get that stock now with a basis of $25. They can sell it and pay no income tax. Biden's proposal is to eliminate stepped-up basis. We're not clear if he would go with what's called carryover basis, to carry on our example there, where the kids would just take the stock at that time with a $10 basis, just like their parents had in it, or whether there could be something more drastic and call for a taxing of the capital gain at time of death, like Canada does, stuff like that.
That would be
so terrible. So, you know, that's a possibility. Now, I want to point out, though, that carryover basis is not something new. This was tried back in 1976. I was actually in law school at the time. I remember this. And it lasted all of 2 years when Congress finally figured out that it failed. And in 1978, they repealed it. So, but, you know, memories fade, and here we go again. What else does Biden want to do? He wants to raise the top individual income tax bracket from 37% up to 39.6%. Most people think that's going to be a pretty easy thing to get past. Boy, the corporate tax rate. You remember how hard Trump worked to get corporate taxes down to 21%? Well, Biden wants to raise that up from 21% to 28%, you know, and that's a very controversial move because, again, our businesses were most heavily taxed in the world, pretty much, and we were being compared to other countries around the world who were being taxed so much less onerously, and Trump wanted to get that down. Well, now we could, you know, very quickly have that 21% rate go way back up. Let's talk about a very, very hot topic, and that is capital gains and dividends. Under current law, for as long as I can remember, long-term capital gain has gotten special tax treatment. And for quite a while now, dividends has shared in that special tax treatment. You know, the current rate is basically 20% plus another 3.8% for the Obamacare tax. So you pay about 23.8%. If you're a high income taxpayer, you pay about 23.8% on long-term capital gains and on dividends. Well, here's the big deal. Biden wants to tax capital gains and dividends at ordinary income rates, which gets you up to 43.4%. How do I get there? Well, it's the sum of the top individual bracket that he wants, which is 39.6, plus this 3.8% Obamacare tax that's still out there. That gets you to 43.4. So you'd be going to from roughly 20-something percent on capital gains to you know, over 40%.
And I'm assuming still limiting you on the downside benefit of capital losses. So you've upside being taxed, and you're still limited on the downside protection.
That's right. Now, I do want to point out that this proposal to tax capital gains at that hefty rate is for people who have income above $1 million. For those with incomes below $1 million, my understanding is the rate would not double like that. I want to talk about another one that gets very little attention that I think is one of the most controversial provisions of all in his proposals, though, and that is payroll taxes. This one slides by without much attention, but this is huge. You know, under the current system, your wages up to $137,700 get hit with Social Security tax, which is a sum for the employer and employee together, is 12.4%. And then there's this Medicare tax of another 2.9%. But then once your wages go above $137,700 under the current system, you only have to pay the Medicare tax, the 2.9. You no longer have to pay the 12.4% Social Security tax. Now, when you get above a couple $100,000, if you're single, or above 250, if you're married, you pay an extra 0.9% surcharge on the Medicare. But anyway, here's the deal. Biden says that when wages go above 400,000, he wants to reinstitute the 12.4% Social Security tax. So let's say you're a self-employed person with wages or Schedule C net income above 400,000 bucks. On that income above 400,000, you're going to get hit with a payroll tax of another 16.2%. You're paying income tax of close to 40% plus payroll tax of close to 16.2%. That's a hefty extra tax. Let's talk about another one. Remember in the Trump Tax Act that if you're a business owner and you get a K-1 from your business, so you're set up as a type of entity where it's passed through and you're getting your income flowing through to your return by a K-1, like you're set up like an LLC or a partnership or an S-Corp. Under the Trump Tax Act, unless you were like a service business, but for most non-service businesses, you could ignore 20% of that K-1 income and just pay income tax only on 80%. They call that this a pass-through deduction, a Section 199A pass-through deduction. Well, Biden's proposal is to eliminate that for incomes above $400,000. So, you know, that's a really nice tax break that we've enjoyed for a couple of years that could really be going away soon. Let's talk about itemized deductions. For those taxpayers who don't take the standard deduction, but you fill out a Schedule A on your income tax return, you itemize deductions. Under current law, we get to take itemized deductions without any cutback. And you get to offset them against all of your income. So if you're in a 37% bracket, you get to save 37 cents on the dollar. Well, Biden's proposal is to cut back these itemized deductions if your income is above $400,000. So you lose, you just absolutely erase some of these deductions. And furthermore, his proposal is that even for those that are not erased, the max benefit you could get is a 28% write-off. In other words, you're not going to get to offset against 39.6% tax. You're going to only get to save 28 cents on the dollar. Talk about another one that I think is a jab at President Trump. And this is the area of like-kind exchanges. For a long, long time now.
I hate to interrupt you right here, but we're going to have to go to a break in just a second. And these types of real estate deductions are so important to our listeners and so important to our clients. I'd like to not end that one on the break. I'd like to pick that one back on the other side, if that's all right.
You bet.
Okay, great. We'll be back on the STA Money Hour. Keep tuned. We'll be keep talking about the tax changes you should expect in 2021. Welcome back to the Money Hour. It's Scott Bishop, Head of Financial Planning at STA Wealth, and Marvin Blum, Tax and Estate Planning Attorney Extraordinaire. And we're talking to you today about many of the changes we should expect based on the new Biden administration and democratically controlled Congress. At the end of last segment, Marvin, I interrupted you. I apologize for that. But you were talking about the possibility of the repeal of the like-kind exchanges, the 1031 exchanges. Can you start over in that area for our listeners, please?
Well, you bet. And the area of like-kind exchanges is a real benefit to taxpayers because it allows you to avoid paying tax on your gains if you will swap your property as opposed to selling your property for cash. And in the recent Trump Tax Act, they eliminated like-kind exchange for a lot of items, but they kept it for like-kind exchanges of real estate. And in the Trump Act, you know, real estate was sacred. There's no surprise to us that that's the case. However, in the Biden proposal, they are advocating that if your income is above $400,000, you will no longer get to take advantage of a like-kind exchange of real estate. So in other words, if you do a swap of real estate, you would still have to pay income tax on the gain. You know, that wraps up most of the Biden proposals, but you know, there are other ideas that have been floated out there. But before I hit those, let me mention a concept called grandfathering. And that is because if indeed changes like these happen, there is always the question of, well, what if I have already utilized some of these provisions in the past? And the pattern has always been that they grandfather those who have already taken action under past law, and they don't apply these provisions on a retroactive basis. That's going to apply more in some of my comments coming up, but I do want to mention not to worry if you've already done something, you're generally going to be protected. But let's look at other possibilities here. You know, we've got this proposal for Medicare for all. You got to pay for it. Will there be a premium tax imposed? Then another area that pops up into my mind is this idea of a wealth tax. You know, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. I mean, we have some very vocal Democrats that are advocates for concepts like this, where they say every year you tally up your net worth and you write a check for, you know, a X percent of your net worth. That could float back out there. Who knows? And another way that the tax law could be impacted is not through new legislation, but through throwing more money at the IRS and beefing up enforcement, because right now the IRS is starving. And if the government starts to fund a lot more into the coffers of the IRS, you know, that might make a difference too, because the government might be able, the IRS may be in a position to actually do a lot more auditing and examining returns than they're able to do currently.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have felt a little bit emboldened to maybe be a little bit more aggressive because of lack of enforcement. But that kind of gets me back to the IRS and some things that concerned me back in the last couple of years of the Obama administration. In the Treasury Department of the Obama administration, they were trying to take away several estate planning tools that you and I have talked with for years, Marvin. But when Trump came in with Mnuchin running Treasury, they took many of those things in process out. So maybe you could talk a little bit about maybe some of those changes in terms of IRS enforcement and IRS regulation that may either change or take away some potential estate planning tools going forward.
Well, this is a really important topic to me as an estate planning lawyer. And let's face reality. A lot of what I'm going to talk about here were were Obama's proposals, but Biden was Obama's vice president and they were in lockstep on things. So I think it's very likely that if it was an Obama proposal, it'll likely be a Biden proposal now. These guys are on the same page. The first topic that comes to mind has to do with valuation discounts. And Scott, I know that was probably in your mind in asking this question.
Absolutely.
Let's wind our heads back to the end of the Obama administration. In his last year in office, the U.S. Treasury issued proposed regulations. These were called Section 2704 regulations to kill valuation discounts on transfers of assets between family members. And this is a tool we use actively in the estate planning world. We call it squeeze planning. You put assets into a family limited partnership. You hire an appraiser to tell you what your units are worth. And the appraiser says, well, hey, you put 100 into the FLP, but your FLP units are worth 65 because I'm going to give you discounts for lack of control and lack of marketability. And we've used these actively to squeeze down the value and supercharge our planning. Obama wanted to kill them. And then Trump got elected and these regulations had not yet become final. And Trump, he took them off the table. He basically said these are unduly burdensome. He took them off the table. Well, they're still out there. They're just up on a shelf getting dusty. My thinking is that they're very likely going to get taken off that shelf. They're going to blow the dust off them. And we're liable to have these valuation discounts regs coming back at us and an effort to kill valuation discounts. Here's the message. Now's the time to do squeeze planning, because we have maybe a little window of time where we can still work magic by reducing the value of your assets and getting them out of your estate in a more efficient way. But those discounts may go away. Now, there's others that are more technical. I'll hit them kind of briefly. One of our favorite tools in the estate planning world is called a grantor trust. And it's a type of trust where Marvin sets up a trust and the trust has taxable income. And because of certain provisions in this trust, that income is still taxed to Marvin. So a grantor trust is where the income of the trust is still taxed back to the grantor. And we love these in the estate planning world because they supercharge our gifts. Marvin gets to keep paying the income tax on assets that he gave away. And that payment of income tax by Marvin not deemed to be a gift. So my kids get extra benefit because they don't have to pay income tax on the assets that I gave to them. I'll pay it for them. Well, they basically want to kill grantor trust. So that's a biggie. Another tool that people love is called the dynasty trust. The mega wealthy in particular like to create perpetual trusts. And you can go to certain states where this is allowed. Texas, you can only get away with trust lasting about 100 years or so, but in other states, you can get them to last a long time or
like
forever.
Nevada or something like that, correct?
Yeah, there are some really, South Dakota and Delaware and Nevada and, you know, Alaska. Well, there is a proposal that if a trust lasts more than 90 years, it's not going to work anymore to save estate tax from generation to generation. So they're going to basically cap these trusts at 90 years. Another tool that estate planners love is called the GRAT, G-R-A-T. It's called a Grantor Retained Annuity Trust. It's a really popular tool to shift assets down to the next generation without having to pay estate and gift tax. We use them now to set up these grants for a period often of like 2 years. And at the end of 2 years, you spill some assets down to your kids with no gift tax. Well, the grant provisions may be changed to where the grants have to have a minimum term of 10 years. And they also don't want to let us zero out these grants anymore. In other words, they don't want to let you pass assets with no gift tax anymore. So there's some changes in the works on grants. A more common tool, though, is this $15,000 annual exclusion gift. And, you know, you can give $15,000 each year to as many people as you wish. Mm-hmm. If you're married, you and your spouse can each do a gift of $15,000. So, you know, husband and wife can give $30,000 to each of their kids. Well, Obama had a proposal that you cap all of your annual exclusion gifts at $50,000 a year. So if a family has a bunch of kids or, you know, kids and grandkids, they can't just spill a bunch of money down to the next generation in a hurry. They're capped. They would be capped at $50,000 a year. And the last one that I have is has to do with a concept called carried interest. And this really applies to owners of investment partnerships who get compensated by allocating capital gains to them so that instead of paying ordinary income tax, that they get compensated in a way where they get to pay capital gains rates. And there's a proposal out there to make all that ordinary income instead of capital gains. So there's a bunch out there. Again, I think these things would be grandfathered. The word to the wise here is engage in the planning while we can. You'll most likely be grandfathered if you've already done it. And then if it changes after you've done it, you're home free, but you can't do it anymore.
So what I want to do, Marvin, when we come back, we only have one more segment left in the show, and I really want to hit on the estate planning tips, income tax planning tips, what they should do now, and we'll hit all those topics on the other side of this break. Welcome back to the Money Hour. Today, I have Marvin Blum on the radio. I'm Scott Bishop, head of financial planning with STA Wealth, and we're going to talk now. We've talked a lot about the changes that may be happening given the Biden administration, but now what I really want to focus on, Marvin, is what should people be doing now for those with large estates? What should be the biggest thing they should be considering from estate planning? For those with larger incomes, what should they be doing in terms of income tax planning? And just kind of get what we can from you for the last few minutes of the show.
You bet. Well, let's start with the estate tax. And the most obvious thing is the type, it's a tool we call use it or lose it. And here's the deal. We currently have an estate tax exemption level of 11.7 million. That's scheduled to sunset in half or lower. As we said, it could even go down to 3.5 million. The idea is lock in the 11.7 million now while we've got it. And then if it later goes down, you will have captured the benefit of the full 11.7 million. And there are a lot of tools that you can employ to do that. But I think that's first and foremost on the list. What kind of tools? I call those squeeze and freeze tools. We spoke a moment ago about squeeze planning. You take 100 of assets, you put them into an FLP, you get them valued at 65. And the next step is called freeze, where you take your units of ownership in that family limited partnership and you move them out of your estate. You put them into various trusts. This can be trust for your kids, such as a defective grantor trust, or it could be trust for your own benefit, which sometimes we use these 678 trusts or beneficiary defective trusts, or very, very popular, a SLAT, a trust for your spouse. So I can transfer assets to a trust for my wife and still have access to it through our marital planning, but I have moved it out of my estate.
So the Spouse and Lifetime Access Trust, or the SLAT right there, right?
The SLAT, exactly. Very popular way to lock in the doubled exemption before it sunsets. And I want to stress that there are ways to have your cake and eat it too. I mean, people hear about this planning, they immediately assume that you're giving up access to the assets. That's not necessarily true. Or they assume you're giving up control. Again, not necessarily true. There are ways to do this where you can retain access to your assets and retain control, and even retain flexibility to change your mind. So I stress that there are creative ways to do this planning, and don't assume that you're having to give up all the strings in order to do this kind of planning. A further point I want to make is interest rates are at an historic lows. You know, we have the monthly applicable federal rate issued by the IRS, and now is the time to take advantage of these extremely low rates through either loans to your kids or sales of assets where you're carrying a note to your kids, or certain techniques that work really supercharged if when the interest rates are low. Let's shift to income tax, though, and talk about tools that you should consider doing. Now, the first thing I'm going to talk about here is the possibility that maybe the income tax rates won't rise till 2022. And there are a lot of people who do believe that that's when the increases will take place. So if that happens, then this is counterintuitive, but the idea is you want to accelerate income into the current year. You want to beef up your income and you want to postpone your deductions. And so if for people worried about capital gains tax rates going up, the idea of selling assets with gains so that you take advantage of the current lower capital gains rate, there's a lot of people thinking about that. Roth IRA conversions, a hot topic, because if you're sitting on a big traditional IRA and you are thinking about converting that to a Roth IRA so that the income you earn, the earnings in that IRA going forward would be free from income tax. Well, the year you convert it to a Roth IRA, you have to bite the bullet and pay the income tax. Well, wouldn't it be better to do that in a year when the income tax rates are lower? So the idea of convert to a Roth IRA while rates are lower before the rates go up. There's some other things, though, that will apply regardless of when the income tax rates go. Let's say you sold a business last year or a real estate investment or something that where you're going to be paid out on an installment basis. You can elect out of installment treatment so that you go ahead and pay the income tax all in this year while the rates are lower. Another hot topic is going to be charitable remainder trust, because as capital gains rates go up, if indeed that happens, I think people are going to be looking for ways to diversify our portfolio without having to pay capital gains tax up front. And the charitable remainder trust is a pretty sexy tool for that. You transfer the assets into that trust, then the trustee sells the assets, and you don't pay any income tax at that date. Then what happens is the trust spills money out to the grantor of it over time. And every year you get a distribution from that trust. And as you get the distributions, you'll pay your tax gradually. So you're dribbling it out, but you avoid that upfront hit. And if that upfront hit is, you know, in the 40% zone, you really are going to, I think, be more inclined to want to avoid it. There's a big discussion going on about what we call SALT, S-A-L-T, the state and local taxes. Let's talk about that for a minute. It's speculation is that Trump was trying to get even with New Yorkers and Californians, and he passed as part of the Tax Act a SALT limit of $10,000. In other words, if you tally up all of your payments of state income tax and sales tax and property tax, you could only deduct the first $10,000 in total, but above that, you were out of luck, no deduction. There is speculation that Biden may want to get the SALT limit repealed and allow for those deductions to be deductible once again in full. So if you think that's coming, perhaps in 2022, maybe you push off paying some of your property taxes into next year instead of this year, things like that.
It'd be interesting if they did that, but didn't have an income cap on that, since it was very much a blue state desire.
Right, right. And so, you know, that's something we'll keep watching. I think that charitable deductions are going to continue to be favored in a lot of ways. For one thing, under the stimulus legislation, you know, you're allowed to deduct your cash contributions to public charities all the way up to a full 100% now of your adjusted gross income. That's last year and now again this year. But for people who don't itemize, this is a little bitty deal, but it's important. If you don't itemize deductions, in 2020, you could deduct $300 of charitable contributions. There's a special place on the tax forms going to allow you to do that. But for 2021, they've renewed that, but they've now actually made it better. If you're married, they've doubled it now from $300 to $600. So $600 of charitable contributions will be deductible, even if you don't itemize. And another point I'll make is for those who are living in states with a state income tax, you know, you're paying not only all this hefty federal tax that I'm talking about, but you also are paying a hefty state tax in cases, especially places like California, New York, New Jersey, et cetera, Connecticut. You're seeing a real migration of people leaving those states, and they're coming our way, aren't they? I mean, they're really invading Texas, and I think you're going to see a whole lot more of that. Move to Texas, a state with no state income tax, and you'll at least avoid that hit.
I agree. Well, Marvin, thank you so much for being on the show. For those of you listening, this was a lot of information. We'll put an article on our website at stawealth.com. We'll have it in the newsletters, which you could sign up for on our website. Marvin, thank you so much for being on the show, and we look forward to talking with you again soon. Have a great day, everybody.